Okay, welcome everybody. We'll get underway. Thank you for coming along. Yeah, the session is IAA Mortality Working Group, an overview, and Martin Stevenson is presenting. Martin will be known to many of you. He's a partner of global consulting company Mercer and a director of Mercer Investment Nominees, trustee company with over 15 billion funds under management. He's an actuary and heads Mercer's national public sector superannuation business. Been working in the superannuation industry since joining Mercer. His experience includes consulting with private and public sector clients in Australia, the area of benefit design, actuarial insurance and investment aspects of superannuation. His clients include major corporates and state Commonwealth funds. He's a past president of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia and is currently chair of the International Actuarial Association's Mortality Working Group. So I'll hand it over to Martin.
Thanks very much, Mike. Well, we're a small group, but I thank you for attending. I'm sure it's a very, very high quality group. When I tell people who are non-actuaries that I'm chairman of the International Actuarial Association Mortality Working Group, their eyes tend to glaze and they groan and they say, well, that's what an actuary would do. But I've actually found the experience of being a chair of this group to be quite fascinating, very interesting professionally, and really the purpose of this talk is to give you an insight about how the group works and hopefully for you to share some of the enthusiasm for some of the work that we're doing. However, I will admit there is another reason beyond the professional enjoyment that is an attraction. The IAA Mortality Working Group meets every 6 months with the International Actuarial Association section committees, and recent meetings have been held in Quebec City, a charming city in Canada, in Cyprus, and in a town called Tallinn. I never heard of the place called Tallinn, but it's the capital of Estonia, and again, a tremendous place to visit. And most recently, there were the conferences held in Cape Town in South Africa. So it is a broadening experience in every way. The International Actuarial Association set up the working group 2 years ago in January 2008. Basically, there are two sort of strong themes, if you like. One is the developing countries where mortality has, and in the increase in longevity has increasingly impinged on a whole range of areas. The increase in longevity and the low fertility leading to an aging population has placed stress on social security systems, on healthcare systems, on defined benefit pension funds. It has made the impossible task of defined contribution members to work out how to manage their retirement plan, their retirement funds even harder. It affects life assurance both in longevity products and also in straight risk products. And there's been a raft of financial products being developed. And changes in longevity are also impinging on workplace practices. More and more people, as we heard in the plenary section, are working longer. And indeed, even industries and infrastructure are affected. So that's what's happening in the developed countries. In the developing countries, the need for some further research in mortality arises from the fact that there just isn't the information available. So all these things I've mentioned, there just really isn't the background data to know what to do. The vision of our working group is that whenever insights are acquired in respect of mortality and trends in mortality, the body of knowledge produced by the IAA Mortality Working Group is sought for its valued and authoritative coverage. If people are aware of the vision of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia, they'll probably have a pretty fair idea where that vision came from. The terms of reference are set out here. It's to monitor data collection efforts internationally and facilitate continuous improvement in the quality and extent of data collection. It's to coordinate the work done by different sections and committees of the International Actuarial Association in the area of mortality, especially where this involves cooperation with other international bodies. So the other international bodies that referred to there are organisations like the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the International Association of Life Insurance Supervisors, and the International Organisation of Pension Supervisors. So our working group has been involved in some ways in working with these groups, although there's a lot more to be done. But perhaps the main term of reference relates to research, where the intent is to extend the body of knowledge in respect of mortality through research and encouraging research and collection of research from both actuarial and non-actuarial resources, and to making research accessible to actuaries globally. So really, that can be summarised by saying that the purpose of forming this group was to leverage the body of knowledge internationally that actuaries have through people working, actuaries working together cooperatively. When we first got together, we quickly decided that the way to tackle this vast subject was to divide it into more easily digestible bits. So, as mentioned before, one of the specific terms of reference was to look at the collection of tables that are produced, which leads on to the availability of data. Huge issue is mortality trends, which has been the subject already of a number of papers here in this forum, leading on to questions of uncertainty. It just so happened at about the time we formed the group, the swine flu pandemic started to rear its head, and that was another aspect that we're looking at. We're looking at mortality by social and demographic stratification and by cause of death. We initially set up the idea of looking at graduation techniques, but we've not actually done anything on that. I think that's because it's probably regarded as a fairly boring part of mortality. And we do intend to look at mortality-rated financial products, but to date there just hasn't been the expertise in the group. And in any event, I think a lot of the work there is sort of a commercial interest, and so is in some ways harder to come by. And then we work with the Society of Actuaries International Experience Study to help do mortality studies in less developed countries. So for the rest of the talk, I'll be going through these various areas. It's interesting that even though our group is a collection of people who one way or another have an interest in mortality, the knowledge about the databases on mortality was quite sketchy in some cases. There really are four databases that we've identified are the main ones to use. The Society of Actuaries Table Manager, the Human Mortality Database, the CMI, Continuous Mortality Investigation of the UK Institute, and the statistics put out by the World Health Organization. The Society of Actuaries Table Manager is very easily accessed just by going to the website. There is some documentation about what's being done there. It does contain both population mortality and life assurance mortality. Great advantage is it's free and it's accessible, and things are there in a uniform format. But it does suffer being put together on a voluntary basis, that the updating is a bit infrequent, and it's a little bit clunky when you try to use the software. It doesn't utilise the latest technologies. A very high-quality database is the Human Mortality Database, which is it's derived from the population mortality for 37 countries, and it's got very comprehensive description of how the mortality tables are developed, and they are all done in a consistent way. Its strength is the way that the data is very strictly controlled. It's only possible to use countries where there is a high degree of certainty about the data. Very comprehensive information is given for each country. But the that very strength is also its weakness. There's a relatively limited range of countries, obviously just 37, and that's limited by the data constraints. And even with the high quality, you still, if official statistics are weak, then that will be duplicated. That slide just sets out the tables that are covered. I won't go through it in detail. Perhaps the most noteworthy thing is that Sweden is the country with the most comprehensive statistics, going back all the way to 1751. By the way, the human mortality database is a joint venture of the University of Berkeley in California. I got that right, or the University of California in Berkeley, sorry, and the Max Planck Institute. Because the data is limited, or the number of countries is limited, they also produce the Human Life Table database, which uses population life tables published and where the data requirements aren't so particular. So further countries are introduced, although clearly the quality is not so high. And because of that, these are the additional countries that are included there. It's very obvious in the discussions that we have in the working group that the country that is most advanced in the analysis of mortality statistics is the UK. They really seem to have sliced and diced mortality data in every possible way. And that's reflected in the CMI library of the UK Institute, which covers, you know, just about everything that you would need. Assured lives, annuitants, pensioners, both life officers and self-administered schemes. Not only are there mortality tables, but there are monetary functions given. There's easy-to-use software so that you can play around with them. As well as base rates, there are projections, although there's warnings about using projections and no guidance as to which they think is the most appropriate. So, as I said, it's a very comprehensive set. The UK profession is continually updating it, continually making improvements, but its weakness clearly is that it's UK-centric. And finally, the World Health Organization, which, as well as using mortality statistics derived from annual reported deaths in civil systems, subdivides the deaths by cause of death, and there are in fact thousands of categories used. The strength of that base is the wide range of countries covered and the information provided on cause of death, but there is a high variability in quality of data. And even for this database, which is probably the widest, there's still a large number of countries with no data available. So this is a list of the countries where there is no data, and some of them, you know, you might expect, and one wouldn't worry too much about not having any information from Liechtenstein or Tuvalu. Even if you could get all the statistics, it's probably not enough people to be significant. But it's perhaps more surprising to see countries like Indonesia on there and Nigeria, countries with huge population and where there's no really reliable statistics on mortality. As I mentioned before, there's been a number of papers here about at this forum about projecting mortality. And in our working group, we've looked at two particular papers and two particular methodologies. One called Spread-Adjusted International Trend, or SAINT. And the point here, or the background here, is to look at a number of countries with similar characteristics and combine the projections there rather than looking at each country individually. The other one is looking at trends and distinguishing between short-term trends and long-term trends and then combining both in the model and for the particular investigation being done, the long-term effects, as well as being a projection from the past, incorporated expert opinion about future life expectancy. The first of those I mentioned about combining the mortality of a number of countries, and what you see there is at a particular age, I think this is 65-year-old female, the first set of lines, the squiggly lines, is the actual experience of a range of countries, basically OECD countries, particularly in Europe. So you have a range of countries where it would be very reasonable to expect that past trends and future trends have certain comparability. But if you take each country individually, and in this case Lee Carter projections were used, and do a projection based on the Lee Carter, you find a great divergence by country of future mortality. And indeed, the divergence between countries is in many cases beyond sort of reasonable statistical limits. And that doesn't exactly seem like a reasonable portrayal of reality. And so the methodology used is to combine the trend mortality of all the countries and use that as a basis for long-term projections and just use an individual country's result for short-term projections. And it does seem to overcome some of the problems of incorporating short-term noise into long-term projections. The other paper I mentioned was also explicitly about looking at long-term versus short-term trends. And this one actually resonates very much with myself and the work that we do in our firm with public sector superannuation funds, where we do have a large collection of data over the past few years. And again, we're confronted with this problem of what allowance do we make in the future? And the sort of the simple graph there was actually used by someone in the Netherlands to illustrate the point. But it applies very much in the Australian environment if we regard that long-term line as perhaps the 105-year improvements, the Australian life tables, when produced by the Australian Government Actuary, have two sets of future improvements in mortality. One's based on 105 years past experience and projecting that, and the other on 25 years. So one could interpret that straight line as the 105-year trend mortality and the curvy line as the 25-year, particularly as it's showing exactly what's happened, that there has been a great improvement in mortality over the past 25 years. And the technique used is to assume, okay, that the short-term trends will continue over the next few years, but then it will trend back to the long-term. Interestingly, the methodology that I've adopted, in fact, the firm's pretty much adopted, is to start off like that and to assume that the short-term improvements will continue, but then take the long-term direction and assume that will continue. So in other words, assuming that the line would go up like that, which perhaps in retrospect it means we're being a bit conservative, which is perhaps not an unreasonable thing to do. The difficulties of projection, and I've listened to a few papers here who have, looking at how we project to the future, the difficulties are underlined by just comparing Australian life tables 2005-2007 with what naively might have been predicted out of the 2000-2002. So in this graph, blue is for boys and pink is for girls, and the continuous line is the actual improvement. So if you look at the blue line, you'll see in the ages 0 to about 40, the actual improvement, the continuous line compared to the expected, has been much greater. The level of improvement has been considerably greater than would have been done just by a naive projection using the 25-year improvement factors. After 40, the two graphs sort of swap positions, and what's actually happened has been less than might have been predicted. But it's just a pretty powerful indication of how much in the short term rates of mortality are actually changing. Another method used in trend analysis is cohort population models, just looking at the way in which people born in a particular set of years, how their mortality increases. And this is shown in a heat map. One of the earlier sessions we had a look at something just like this, where basically the red and the yellow colours show quite high improvement, and the green and the blue show not much improvement. And the absolute poster child, if you like, for cohort projections is the UK. Down across the bottom is the calendar year, across the going up is age. So that very strong diagonal trend that you see there is indication of mortality moving by cohorts, and it's extremely notable in the UK. If you look at other countries, if you look at Canada, perhaps one can see the cohort effect in respect of males, but it doesn't seem to exist for females. In France, perhaps a fair bit of evidence in both cases, and in Japan we have, again, maybe the males a bit of an effect. It's hard to see much happening with the females. And in Russia, not much is happening at all. I think the effect of vodka and social upheaval have really taken their effect. Now, I think the next one is where we move into social. So we just move into the effect of social stratification, different social classes, the effect on mortality. And I have a video to sort of demonstrate.
I look down on him because I am upper class. I look up to him because he is upper class. But I look down on him because he is lower class. I am middle class. I know my place. I look up to them both. But I don't look up to him as much as I look up to him. Because he has got innate breeding.
I have got innate breeding, but I have not got any money. So sometimes I look up to him.
I still look up to him. Because although I have money, I am vulgar. But I'm not as vulgar as him. So I still look down on him. I know my place. I look up to them both. But while I am poor, I'm industrious, honest, and trustworthy. Had I the inclination, I could look down on them. But I don't.
We all know our place, but what do we get out of it?
I get a feeling of superiority over them.
I get a feeling of inferiority from him. But a feeling of superiority over him. I get a pain in the back of my neck.
Right, so that's what social and demographic stratification is about. And as all studies have shown the correlation between that and mortality is very, very strong. This graph, which was also shown in an earlier presentation, shows the life expectancy in England and Wales, and the different lines are different social classes, and there's just a perfect, if you like, correlation between the two. Cause of death is... changes in the cause of death are incredibly dramatic over the past century, and underline the reasons for changes in mortality, and again, I think, show why it's so difficult to predict future levels. The purple line is infectious diseases. Oh, and this is, again, applying to England and Wales, and, of course, be quite different in developing countries. But for developed countries... the purple line, as I say, is infectious diseases, and that's virtually been eliminated as a cause of death. Respiratory diseases have come right down. The huge spike would be the Spanish flu. Circulatory diseases having risen, then come down, and it's really only cancer that is providing something like a level of death. But that obviously is have a lot to do with the fact that people aren't dying of other causes. So, you know, I guess the question is what does the future hold? But it's no surprise that rates of mortality have improved so much over the century. The Society of Actuaries International Experience Study is a means by which actuaries in less developed countries can gain access to... rigorous mortality studies. The Society of Actuaries will make available software for these countries, for actuaries in these countries, to work together to do mortality studies. And the Society of Actuaries makes it available for free, with the only condition being that the combined results can be published. since it's mainly been done with life assurance companies, there's not possible to publish the results of individual companies because for commercial reasons, but the results by country are aggregated. And a number of countries have already been done, half a dozen countries, as you see on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side are a number who are interested, and in fact most of those who are interested arising out of the International Actuarial or the International Congress of Actuaries held in Cape Town earlier this year, where we of the working group together with the SOA made a concerted effort to talk to a number of people from these countries and have generated a large amount of interest. Not only amongst life companies, but it can also be applied to social security work as well. When the swine flu pandemic break out, one of the members of our group very quickly wrote or put together a paper, quite a good paper, which was published on the IAA website about what is a pandemic, what the history of pandemics, and the implication of pandemics for insurance business. This pandemic in the event has been quite interesting in that whilst one might think pandemic would spread more quickly these days because of international travel, in fact, because of the role of medicine and vaccines, it has been well contained. It might be a little bit premature to break out the champagne immediately, though, because when you look at past pandemics, it's actually the second and the third wave, which is the deadlier. Another aspect which we studied and came up with what to me was a fascinating result was looking at gender differences. What is well known, of course, is that around the world, and these are Australian statistics, females live longer than males, and the tables there are taken from the Australian Life tables, just showing the age, the difference between the female life expectancy and the male life expectancy, And whilst it might vary over the years, again, the calendar years are there. Whilst it might vary the amount of the difference, it's always above zero. And if you do the same thing for other countries around the world, with extraordinarily few exceptions, you get the same result. There have also been studies about the gender differences in animal mortality. Now, I don't know the methodology, but it has been done. And again, in general, the female mortality is lower than the males. If you look at the groups down there, they're virtually all lower than 100%, small primates perhaps a little bit over. But the one that stands out, where males actually live longer than females, is a group called the ratites, of which the emu is one of the members. And one might speculate a little bit about why there is a difference between mortality between males and females. One explanation is that men's behaviour is more risky, or perhaps it's just men are stupider than women, be my view. Perhaps the testosterone lowers the immune system. Men are larger, which probably puts more stress on the body. But as we know, men, and the distinguishing feature genetically between males and females, is that men only have one X chromosome. We have an XY chromosome, where the Y is much smaller than the X, whereas the females have two X chromosomes. And what I personally find very interesting is that group that I mentioned before, the ratites, where the male birds live longer, they actually have two chromosomes of the same type, Z chromosomes, and it's the females that have the WZ. So the differentiation could be due to genetics. Membership of our group is set out there. I won't go through it, but it is truly an international group, as you can see from the various countries represented there. One of the major initiatives we're working on now is to develop a website on the IAA website. The purpose of this website will be to be a hopefully well-structured website dealing with mortality matters, so that people can readily find the literature on the subject, and hopefully we'll also do it in such a way that when people go searching using Google or other search software, they will be directed to the site. Another project we're working on in conjunction with CAS which is the London Business School, is to update a study that was done 5 years ago, which was to look at the assumptions the pension actuaries are making about mortality improvements. If you go back 15 years or so, in Europe in particular, virtually no pension actuaries were making assumptions about mortality improvements, and the sudden discovery about it didn't do the actuarial profession in the UK, for one, any good. So a survey was done about 5 years ago as to what actuaries in different countries were assuming about mortality and mortality improvements, and that's being updated. We get members from two sources. One is that local associations can nominate a member to join, so that the Australian Institute, for example, nominated myself. But now we're also opening it to professionals who are interested in mortality who would like to join. So, Mr. Chairman, that brings it to an end.
Thanks, Martin. Before we open up the discussion, so I need you, when you have a question or a comment, to speak through the microphone because it's been recorded. Otherwise, we won't catch you. So I'll just open it up. Put your hand up if you want to make a comment.
David Knox. Thanks, Martin, for all that good stuff. I've got two questions. Firstly, you showed the decline in the gender gap on Australian mortality rates. Question was, is that being seen in other countries? And second question, you showed the heat maps for other countries. Have we got one for Australia? And what does it show?
Hello? In answer to the first question, yes, the narrowing of the gap between male and female mortality is pretty widespread. And I think one of the reasons is equally widespread, the more men giving up smoking and women either, not having the leeway to give up smoking or else even continuing on perhaps more than they have in the past. And heat maps in respect of Australia, yes, do exist. They're actually shown in one of the earlier sessions. If you look really, really hard, I think you can see a cohort effect, but it's not very marked. I think there's a. I'm not at all surprised that the study of cohort effect is mainly in the UK because it is just so pronounced there, and there's a particular group born in the late 1930s, I think, that where it's just a very obvious effect. Yeah.
Other questions or comments?
Bernard Smith, MLC. Martin, I'd be interested in more information on your last dot point there about mortality professionals joining your group. Presumably that's not the committee, that's some sort of mailing list or information sharing network, is it?
Sorry, what was the last bit? The
How will that mortality professionals welcome to join? Is that a committee or is that a list?
Right. It is this working group that I'm talking about. We want to keep it reasonably small because, no, it's not just a mailing group. It's people who... hopefully, do participate in research and do participate in the activities of the group. And it's people... ideally, we like people to join us in our meetings, but we realise that for many people that's not feasible, so there's the opportunity to join by phone. People joining the group, we do expect some participation, not just a sort of a mailing list. I think as far as, people who want to be kept up to date, when we get the web organised, that will be the opportunity. When I mentioned professionals joining, I meant people who would participate in some of the activities that we do.
Thanks for the presentation, Martin. It's Andrew Boll. Has any work been done on factors and even sort of cohort analysis and factors that might go the other way in the future, in particular things like obesity and diabetes and what the projected impacts of those might be going forward?
Yeah, there is work that does attempt to do that, but I... It's my understanding that as yet it's not well enough developed, and when you think about it, that's not surprising because if like there are 20 factors and you only do 15, well you may have missed the important five. There's an enormous amount of cross-discipline work being done in the UK in particular, where the actuarial profession is actively engaging with the medical profession, with demographers, with something like a pediatrician. I can't say the word, but it's people who study diseases. And I think it will take a long time before one can get a comprehensive model to do that.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that would be really interesting with the cohort effect later on is the impact of obesity in childhood and what impact that might have later on in the wear and tear on the body over a whole lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I might comment on the obesity. There are some studies looking at this effect on mortality, and obviously it's not looking at cohort effects, but it affects certainly your ill health. But once you get into the old ages, a little bit of extra weight tends to give you a little bit of an extra mortality kick, actually. But you spend a lot more of your time alive in ill health, yeah. But as far as the cohort, you know, being obese going through life, we don't yet know, yeah. Yeah.
You'll be around to see.
Yeah,
I hope not.
So, other comments on... or observations on your own experience with mortality and...
I might just make one comment, which you know, in some looking at some of the work and some of the tables, I find quite interesting, and I'd be interested in people's thoughts on this theory I'm about to put out. It's observable in many countries that mortality starts first to improve at the sort of the younger or middle ages, 40 to 60-year-olds, say, in particular, and for a while there's virtually no improvement in the older ages. People have wondered a bit about that. Doesn't mean that there's not a general improvement in mortality, but it is only in these ages. But there is another sort of explanation of that, which is labelled frailty theory, that if you get an improvement in mortality of 40 to 60-year-olds, the ones who aren't dying, and that's how you get the improvement, the ones who aren't dying are kind of more frail than the general population. They make it through to the older ages. And so they actually mean that for a while the population at the older ages is less fit, and it kind of disguises an underlying improvement. If that theory is correct, we will be seeing more and more improvement at the older ages, and perhaps at an accelerating rate. I don't know, Mike, if you've come across that theory or had any thoughts on it.
Yeah, the idea of frailty where you've got a heterogeneous population, everyone doesn't have the same mortality rate, so those that aren't as healthy die off earlier, and then when you look in the projection into the rates in the future... you know, underlying mortality may not be changing. It's just that the mix in the group of lives is more healthier lives who've lived longer. So it looks as though there's improvement going on when actually you've got a mix of people with different risks. They're not all the same, and some die earlier and some live longer, and we just happen to model everything by age and assume everybody of the same age has the same mortality. And it's not the case. Heterogeneity, it's quite substantial actually on these models.
Suzanne Soldra, I've just got a question. On the heat maps, at some years you could see a big spike where it seemed to improve. I presume that's medical advances. Has any work been done to remove medical advances from the heat map diagrams?
Not that I'm aware of, Mike. Mike might know better, but I mean, I think medical advances are presumably the... very much the main reason for improvements in mortality. When I say medical advances, there's actually also an argument that I've heard that it's virtually lifestyle changes that have made a greater impact than medical advantages, but the two, I guess, in some ways go hand in hand. Is washing your hands a lifestyle change or a medical advance? I'm not sure, but it's probably about the best thing you can do for your health is regular hand washing. I think those two things, the medical advances and awareness of healthier lifestyles, are basically the cause of, or the main cause of all the mortality improvements. I don't know how you would try to get rid of one of those effects.
I don't need the mic for this. That's why they call it old man emu and not old woman emu.
Any other comments? No? Okay, well, let's thank Martin for a very interesting presentation and very interesting discussion.